This is RSBNB Update, episode 610, recorded Thursday, March 16th, 2017, Empowering Clans and Community. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update. Just myself and Sirion here this week, your podcasting family, or fam, I guess, as the younger people call them.
Do people call it fam?
Oh, yeah, that's a word that people use nowadays, fam. And, you know, it's a term of endearment for, I think, the people that you hang around, so...
It feels like only yesterday where I considered myself part of the young people, but I would never use fam.
Oh, see, I initially thought that, and I've actually picked that up and incorporated into my vocabulary, as well as the word lit. So, yeah, I guess you could say that we're not lit yet. We'll see if we get there on this episode. You aware of that term, lit?
No.
Okay. Oh, basically means popping and hot and where someone wants to be, that kind of thing. But anyways, you guys are wondering why it's just us here. But, you know, in reality, we were going to have a guest on this week. But it turns out that this is the Ninja Update week, a bunch of patches. So we figured we'd save the guest for something more substantive and just have an episode here with some ninja patches and some questions and discussion topics from our... posers, our question posers and discussion posers. All right. So Ninja Update Week. Shall we begin with some of the ones that they highlighted?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so Ninja Update Week, many patches this week, but here's the ones that Jagex chose to highlight on their front news post. Spawn rates, with the exception of object spawns, will no longer scale with the server player count. Instead, they're fixed at a rate equivalent to a half full server prior to this change. So, obviously, this means from monsters and whatnot. And we've known for a long time that the more full a server, the more monsters will spawn. And this was, of course, done to increase the amount that people would get when they were fighting if it was a busy world, as used to be the case on many of the Slayer worlds. And, you know, I think...
I think it also happened a lot with, like, competition for mining was... was a big thing back then.
Right, but it says not object spawns, so that's...
Wouldn't that be, like, item spawns?
Hmm. You know, maybe you're right, because I think an object would be something that you would pick up off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so perhaps this might be related to mining as well.
Mining, woodcutting, hunter...
Right, because if you look at the server list today, I mean, most of the servers don't have more than 200 people in them unless it's a specialized server geared towards a certain task, right?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the days where you had to look through the world list to find a world that was not full.
Yeah.
The last time I've seen a full world, that must be years ago.
Yeah, and I mean... this always brings up a question for people, you know, is RuneScape having trouble? Are there less people playing the game now than there were in the past? And, you know, I think back then there were fewer worlds because, you know, we have over 150 of them now geared towards various things, free to play and whatnot.
I mean, there was a time where there were still a lot of worlds. I don't think the number of English worlds has increased that much, but
no.
We also have to think about localized versions being introduced. There's also French and
German.
Portuguese.
Yeah.
Not sure about Spanish, but
no.
There's a couple of localized worlds as well
German.
That people will be playing on.
And you know, I can see why they did this, and it's probably a change that needed to be made. And you know, it could ultimately raise that whole debate: should we decrease the number of worlds once again, because they pulled this back in their player power year in 2014, I believe that was, and should we do this? And, you know, in general, the people just said, no, keep the worlds as they are right now, even if they're sparsely populated. So this might spawn some other debate in that. And, you know, based on what I see now, I don't know if I'd vote the same to keep the servers as they are sparsely populated.
I mean, back then was before NXT, so I think people were worried as well about the
performance.
Yes, the performance that would be worse in busy areas if worlds would be collapsed. So now that NXT is there and populated areas are not a big deal anymore at all, I guess it would be a lot easier to do it. But there's always this sentimental value. Like, every current world will probably have clans attached to it.
Yep.
And like it's like, who how
and if
do you
get disrupted, where do you go next, right?
Yeah, I mean every single world means there is another opportunity to get your empty Slayer spot. And I mean, I don't think there's a lot of people that like the fact that there has to be competition on, like, skilling spots. So
yeah.
I definitely think we should work towards less worlds, but then there are some gameplay aspects that should probably be considered, like maybe having Slayer instances as a thing.
And, you know, they are going to be working that into the mining and smithing rework, so that or will not, you know, be dependent on whoever strikes it first to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm kind of looking to the future with this one, and it's very neat to see this as the top patch note for this week. Here's another massive one, something that, you know, really goes back to the very beginnings of RS, in that if you were free to play long ago, you could not trade prayer potions. Prayer potions were exclusively a members-only item, and if back in the day prayer potions were allowed to be traded, it would have completely changed free-to-play PvP. But here we are in 2017. Prayer potions are now tradable on free-to-play worlds, which I'm not going to complain about, because that just means there's more of a market for prayer potions, and the prices could fluctuate with that, because anytime you're expanding that market, that's good. So,
is there any way to obtain prayer potions except from through the GE for free to play then?
No, you have to GE them or buy them from someone, because obviously you can't get to level 38 herb lore on the free to play world.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think that's okay to have some resources made in the members world and then sold back to the free to play world, as long as there's not too many of them. So you can now choose where your attack option appears. You can either have it be a left click, a right click, or a right click based on level dependent, or hidden on various creatures. You know, I've never really thought too much about this. I always thought the default option of, you know, if you were higher level than the creature, it would appear as a left click. If you were lower level, you would have to right click. And I always thought that made sense. You know, but now that the option's here, I'll probably just go to left click for everything, because why waste that extra click?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I would not have it on left click is if you're in the wilderness with people you're doing an event with or something, you might want to avoid that. But otherwise, I don't think I've ever misclicked something, like accidentally attacked it with a left click, so.
Okay. And also the hidden option. So I guess that would just mean that you basically mean you don't want to have the option of attacking things, and you don't want to accidentally attack something then.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to think where this would
be used. That might be helpful for, like, the Abyss, for example.
Okay.
If you just want to go runecrafting, there's so many creatures there, and if you just hide it, I mean, yeah. But then, on the other hand, why would you not just put it in a right-click menu?
Right.
Why would you not?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't see what the advantage of hide is.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking about, because you're going to get attacked, and if you want to engage that target, you're going to need to go into your settings and do that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you get auto-attacked, that kind of defeats the purpose of hiding it. So, I don't know. That one's a bit of a weird one. I have to experiment with that. Maybe on a low-level character and see how that goes. Next up, clues which require no equipment can now be completed with auras equipped. Good for those who put their aura on before doing a clue and don't want to delete the passive side effect of that aura if you have, you know, 45 minutes left and you're doing a clue. So that's a good change that was made. And I would actually extend this further, and I would say that, you know, if it's a clue that requires no equipment, and you know, need a quick and easy way to take everything off, they should maybe just have a button on the clue that when you go dig on that clue, it allows you to take everything off if it's a no equipment one, because you're going to need to do that regardless, right? No? Okay. Keybinds have been added to the interface when building furniture in your POH. So if you're doing construction, you can now press on the keyboard to select what to build. So once again, removing the amount of mouse movements and, you know, just in general streamlining the way construction works. And, you know, this is probably overdue given our reliance on keystrokes and RuneScape to accomplish things and just make things a lot more streamlined. So... good change here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Other patch notes we have this week revolve around some fixes to the Lumbridge Crater in that they fixed a force walk tile that was there, preventing people from walking over certain areas. And I believe this was one near the Zamorak encampment that kind of gave the impression that the Zamorak encampment was still there. So that was kind of fun to see a force walk tile right there. Players now only need to click on a clan citadel loom once, continuing to weave automatically until there's no thread left to weave.
In a way, this makes sense.
Okay.
Because all the other plots do this, right? All the other plots, you click and it does a few actions before you have to click again. And the number of actions it does varies, but like there's always something. Well, the loom was very, very click intensive.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I also think that the crafting experience is probably the most desired experience.
Oh, yeah. Whenever I go there, that's what I would do. Because, it's, I mean, it's free, like, crafting XP.
I mean, as somebody who had to sort of keep an eye on the Citadel resources for a clan, like, there's always a surplus of cloth because that's what people want to train. So... now it's even easier to get it, and maybe that's not necessarily a good thing. Like, it's a good quality of life update in a way, but it's also going to make it even easier to get to 99 crafting. So,
yeah,
I mixed feelings about
it. And, you know, at the end of the day right now, I think crafting is one of those skills that needs a rework or needs to, you know, have some balance changes to make it so that it feels usable and desirable, because right now, what is there in crafting that you can strive for that's usable in endgame, right? Aside from a few pieces of jewelry.
We will get some of that with the luck rework. So.
Oh, good. You're right. You're right. Right on. Timer bar has been added when using Crystallize to show the duration of the spell, so you know exactly how long is left and when you might need to click that spell again. You know, that's good because... sometimes if you're just in the AFK sense and you're hunting with Crystallize, you might miss the fact that, oh, it's up and, I haven't reapplied it. So that's good. I'm happy about that. Players are now able to check when they're next eligible to force a Slayer task with the Slayer mask. This can now be done via the check kills option on all masks with a 3-day cooldown. That's good, I think, because, you know, so many people, I think, force these tasks, and once again, quality of life, enabling people to determine what they're going to do quickly without trying to, you know, get a task unsuccessfully going to the Slayer Masker and wasting those few minutes that takes. So that's a good change.
Mm-hmm.
Also, remove the check duration option on portable skilling locations, moving the information to the examine option. Okay, that's good. And I think that's what examine should be used for, is relaying, you know, important information like that. Because, like, you see, okay, this is a portable well, and I examine it, and it tells me what it does. Well, obviously, the name infers that. So, glad they moved this around. And, you know, quite honestly, going check duration was kind of annoying.
It's always good to, like, limit the number of interactions you can do with an object. Like, it makes it less complicated to interact with it. And the easier you keep things, the better. It's the so-called KISS principle, right?
Yep. And, you know, in some reasons, that's why I like macOS over Windows. So... the invention skill guide now lists the level unlocks instead of 3 question marks when the level requirements are not met, which, I mean, a year and a few months after invention came out, you know, this is something I think that can be revealed to the world when that data is already out there at various third-party sources. So thank you, Jagex, for doing that.
In a way, I like not seeing what was ahead, but I noticed that in practice, I would go and look up when would the next, like, big... charge reduction be like, should I save my inspiration, that kind of stuff. So I don't know, in a way I liked it the way it was, but I guess you can still choose not to look at the unlock tree at all.
Yeah, I mean, if you were completely immersive, you would choose not to look. So all right, it's no longer possible to destroy augmented items by dragging them from the worn interface. Yeah, that's a pretty good change to make, and you know, you might accidentally drag them away, at, like out of your window, and accidentally destroy something like that. And I don't know if it would give the confirmation, but let's just say it was something expensive. I think that would be a pretty bad thing to do.
I'm gonna be honest. I have so much trouble with dragging and clicking and that confusion in the game. Like, when I want to slay a task, I often do Abbey Demons for my slayer task, and they drop sharks. And it's always good to have a few sharks in inventory just in case you, like, get a bit overconfident. But like, usually I disassemble them. And what I do is I drag the shark to the disassemble icon, but sometimes the drag would not register properly, and it would click. I would eat the shark. I would lose adrenaline. It sucks. I had the same issues, like with, like, say when you drag like a helmet or a body or a weapon to the disassemble icon, and like you equip it instead of disassembling it. And if you then don't pay enough attention and like, hey, that didn't work, and drag from the same spot to the disassembly icon, you would actually possibly accidentally disassemble your item that you were wearing before. It's like the whole thing, like, this is part of what pisses me off about the interface so much, is that there's this delay and these weird quirks. It just doesn't work very well. It's not snappy. It feels like this decade old interface that I don't think NIS is a decade by now, is it?
No, but I mean, I bet the stuff underneath is still old.
It's like, you would expect that if you click something, it responds directly, but it doesn't, and it just doesn't respond.
Another question I might ask with this is this done on your Mac?
I think this was mostly a Mac issue.
Yeah, because I have seen the same thing, and I think if we were seeing the same thing on Windows, that likely would have been complained about by now. So I can't remember seeing it on Windows personally, so I'm thinking maybe it's a Mac issue.
It might be, but like, still, Mac is a market you have to keep in mind, I think, for NXT as well. Don't know. It feels like, basically what I'm trying to say is, like, these are serious issues with the interface, and I would like them to be fixed, but If it can't, then these are really important fixes to reduce the number of accidents that happen through technical problems with the interface.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just think of, like, the possibility of disassembling something you don't want to do. That's bad. And, I mean, I have actually had single clicks registers double clicks on RS, and I think that might have been to the fault of my mouse, but I'm not sure. So, anyways, I'd be interested to know what portion of people who use NXT are using it on the Mac, because it works pretty well. So
it works a lot better than a Java client, is all I can say. Right. I still used to have like frequent crashes. It's still, I might have to update manually, but I still get a really long loading screen when setting it up.
Same.
And even though they fixed it, apparently, except for they didn't, it feels...
Yeah, my client is still on 2.2.3 from last December.
When the NXT client came out, it felt sort of on equal foot with the Windows client, but ever since, I felt it is sort of a second-class citizen in the overall structure. Like, it clearly feels that the Windows client is a lot more stable, and while that's the case for most games, I think, that the Windows client is more stable, but there's so many regressions in how the Mac client has worked that I feel there's no serious effort to keep it running as smoothly on Macs. And
yeah,
I don't know about the state on Linux, but...
Well, you know, just put it in this perspective. When I first got my Mac, the only way to play RS was with Firefox. And, you know, back then, that was RS2. And you know what was missing? What feature of RS was missing on the Mac back then?
My guess is sound.
There you go. So, I mean, it's come a long way to the point when we didn't have sound for the game on the Mac. So, I mean... Yeah, well, there's a few niggles left over now, but I think overall it's greatly improved, minus a few graphical crashes here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Players can no longer cast alchemy or dissemble baby ice fiends from the perils of Ice Mountain Quest. You monsters, Jagex says. I'm guessing this was an inventory item that we would pick up in that quest.
I do not remember.
Yeah. But alchemy and disassemble. I wonder what kind of parts that gave. Are there frozen parts? Or ice parts? I don't know.
They must have given, like, they must have been configured to be disassembled. So it feels like a weird oversight.
Yeah. Unlocking the Tzrek Jad via the Spotlight Store is the final requirement for the insane final boss title. Will now send the relevant broadcast. It's good giving the people credit that they desire.
Mm-hmm.
Added and updated various audio assets in West Ardoyan, the Underground Pass, and Isifdar. You know, that's something that is good because, you know, I think we all agree that the plague quest line that takes place in that area and ultimately opens up the Elven Lands is perhaps one of the most important quest lines in RS, considering where it leads to the various Grandmaster and Six Age quests. So, you know, any experience update on this is good. I'd love to play through these again.
Like, Ardoyne, and especially West Ardoyne, are really high up in my wish list for graphical reworks. At the moment they started doing graphical reworks, I was just hoping that Ardoyne would be up there, because that is...
Well, yeah, it's probably second largest to Varrok, right, if you include the area. So, and there'd be a lot of good things they can do nowadays based on the changes that have been made in the various quest lines. So,
but they seem to like be slowly making their way from like Caffaby to Sears Village.
Sears is next on the list.
So I'm hoping they're slowly going down and taking Ardoyne, maybe in like two steps, like East Ardoyne first and then West Ardoyne.
Yeah.
But I'm really hoping that that's going to be next, and then hopefully all the way down to Janil. So yeah, keep them coming.
All right, now here's a real funny one. Araxi will no longer rarely instantly kill herself upon spawning.
See, I am a developer, and seeing these kinds of bugs sort of makes me interested of what kind of edge case was happening here.
Yep.
And,
and how could you trigger this as a player, and would you still get the drops at the end of the day is the question that I have.
and the fun part about being a developer is finding these bugs, and they often have a really, really silly cause, and finding out this cause is such a fun moment where you just... laugh really hard about, oh, that's what we did wrong. And every time I see this, I sort of want to know more about the situation so I can also sort of appreciate it.
Yeah.
But then again, I also understand that it's probably a bit of a niche. Like, you have to like this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there's probably some stuff that they can't say about this that would infer on how the process for that NPC works.
Yeah, that's correct.
We also got some combat stat updates for the lunar equipment. The Lunar Helmet E and Charged variants have been updated to match the regular Lunar Helmet, which is an armor upgrade from 126 to 196, a magic boost from 0 to 14, and combat tier from 40 to 60, as well as the Lunar Ring got combat stats updated. Lunar Ring I from 17 to 21 magic, 17 to 19 armor, and decreased to tier 55, which was previously tier 60.
Cool.
The ribbon interface in Legacy skin mode will now correctly use the disabled variants of the icons when relevant. I use Legacy skin mode, and you know it actually makes it look a lot more like the old Legacy UI did back then. So you know you will notice this if you are using the Legacy skin mode. And the reason I'm using the Legacy skin mode is I find I can reduce the transparency of this UI more than I could the previous one, and it makes the font easier to read than it does on the RS3 UI. I don't know why I find that. I just find it easier to read that way. Audio has been added to pouring tea to and from the tea flask and when drinking tea from the tea flask. You know, they added, of course, tea flasks and whatnot because those are what counteracts the aggression potion. So obviously they needed a flask for that, and you know, just great attention to detail here. All right, so here are the ones that we talked about previously. So we're just going to move straight on past the ones, of course, the prayer potions, the construction keybinds, and the attack options. And now one that I think lots of people have been eagerly anticipating and asking Jagex for a long, long time. Players can now check when their account was created and the amount of time spent playing at Hands in Lumbridge. Did you go there and have a look?
Oh.
Aw, too bad. So, I'm in a predicament with this, and lots of other old players are as well. And you know what that predicament is?
They were only tracking it from a certain date, probably.
That's right. They were only tracking it from February 27th, 2002, which was day one of the members option. So if you created your account before then, it will say you created your account on February 27th, 2002. So mine was created sometime before then. Who knows when? But that's what we know about my account. So if you are interested in figuring out how long you've been around, you can do that, and you'll be given a day's counter, and you can just calculate based on that. It is now possible to create an Etude Crystal Teleport Seed with unlimited charges for 4,000 harmonic dust. You know, I like this update, and that is the main reason that I don't use the Crystal Teleport Seeds, is because they would always run out of charge. So I think creating one of these is going to be something that I'm going to do.
I mean, I have a stack of like 50 of them in my bank, like the normal crystal teleport seeds.
Right.
And like I would use them. I would always have like a stack of empty ones. I would have a stack of full ones. And I would have possibly one that was like half degraded. And I would use them for farming up runs. And then at some point when I had like only like two or three left, I would just fill up my inventory, recharge all of them in one go, and be done with it. And I never had an issue with it. So I'm probably not going to get it, especially given that they now are given 8 charges instead of 3, which is the next update. So
yeah.
Spoilers.
See, the thing that annoyed me with this is that you could have them in your bank, and you would constantly need to position the bank because you would have your stack of 3, charged with 2, and then 1, and then your stack of empty ones. And you would always need to move it around to exactly where you wanted it. It wouldn't just go back into the spot. And that is what you know, really annoyed me with this, and I think is my driving force to create one of the attuned crystal teleport seeds.
I guess, like, the main use for this will be farming on presets. Like,
if you
have a preset, then it would not automatically
on the head.
Right. Yeah.
And,
so,
and that's
I mean, I
that's
guess,
concerning.
Yes. Yeah.
And like you said, the standard one's up from 3 to 8, so that's good. And, I mean, there's no reason not to use them now, and this is perhaps one of the earliest crystal items that we had in-game, so something that everyone likes.
I just wish there was a way to use your non-attuned crystals, like, especially because after the attuned crystal teleport seed, they will have no use anymore. So it would be nice if you sort of could convert them into harmonic dust, like small amounts or something. That would be good.
Oh, yeah, that'd be interesting. That'd be very interesting.
Not doesn't have to be a lot, but just, I mean, like otherwise 20. It's just sitting there in your bank. So
like 20 harmonic dust.
Yeah, something like that.
Several texts, including the Tale of Scorpius, the Times of Lathis, and the Varrock Museum display cases have been modified to improve the accuracy of early Kandaran history records. Thanks to FSWE1 and Lord Draken for exhaustive research and citing references. So this is a player lore update here. The players basically researched all of RuneScape history and made these changes to the text inside the museum that Jagex had wrong, but other sources in-game has said otherwise. I just found this one really interesting because, you know, you don't normally see a patch note like this.
I think it's important that you do this kind of stuff. I mean, there's so much lore in the game, and Jagex cannot afford to keep it all up to date, to always check everything. And players that care do, and I think it's good that you have this community involvement, and I really like that they take this seriously and implement it.
Absolutely. All right, well, there's the patch notes for this week. Anything else that we didn't go over that you'd like to give a mention to?
No, I think the patch notes, like, the last few weeks, Ninja patch notes have been fairly, I wouldn't say disappointing, but very bare. And even right now, it feels less than you would expect, given the little Ninja updates we saw the past few weeks. And I think it's also, we are getting to this point where there's less big and substantial updates because they're all working on
That's
the expansion.
Right. Yeah.
But it becomes hard to now sort of defend yourself for the community, like to explain yourself, given that we are now paying the price for the expansion, but we have no idea yet what the actual payoff is going to be. So we are now in this situation where we have to like sort of model true for the next 3.5 months, I think it is. So yeah, it's hard. I find this a bit of a disappointing week in terms of updates.
Yeah, me too.
In general.
And you know, that's one thing we're really striving to work on here. And you know, we can present these Ninja patch notes no problem. And we love going through them. And, you know, I think that as long as there is substantive discussion, we'll be okay. And that's what we're ultimately getting towards. And, you know, I'd still like to, you know, give it another month or two and see what the player base is thinking about what we're seeing for the game update strategy and see how people feel about their choices and if that's something they want to do, continue with. So we'll wait and see.
Ultimately, this comes down to exactly the same discussion we had a couple of episodes ago. That was also Patch Week, and it was dubbed a Patch Week, but it had almost nothing of substance to it, even less than this time. And that, what we sort of concluded was that maybe we have to look at if it's worth calling these Patch Weeks. Like, I have a feeling there's this pressure that still every week something has to be released. And you get something like this, where there's this Ninja patch weeks, like I'm using air quotes here, which you can't see probably, So, like, I think the strategy on these patch weeks might have to be a bit different. I think they...
There's no shame in calling it a non-update week. It's just that, that's something that RuneScape has never had.
Like, why would you announce, do a big news post on, like, oh, sorry, we don't have an update? Like, that's because the status quo is an update every week, and I think we should go the other way. I think people should not have to expect a big update every week and be pleased when there is something. So, I don't know. I'm not convinced yet of the current model, but...
You know, I'm trying to think back to the very early days of RS2 in 03 and 04, and if I recall, there were some weeks where the update really didn't have that much to it. I mean, if you go back to those news postings, there were some weeks where Andrew would just make a few offhand remarks about a couple little things changed on the back end and not much was changed. So, I mean... They have always updated the game in that regard, and they have pushed those changes out. So, I mean, it's a question of the way players want to look at it and what players are going to demand. But anyway,
I think Jerry should just stop making things bigger than they are. They should put the truth there and be like, all right, no updates this week, just a couple of patches. Hope you enjoyed them. Something next week.
See you next week.
People should be like, okay, that would just... gonna continue enjoy what we were doing, and everybody will be happy.
I agree with that. All right, well, there is also something else happening this week. Starting on March 13th, the name releases were happening, and they're doing one letter a day. So the 13th was A, 14th was B, 15th was C, and the 16th was D, and E will be on Friday the 17th, and so on and so forth. So, you know, I think this is a good way of doing it rather than, you know, bundling them all up together and forcing people to have a mad rush to change names because the name change service went down last time they tried this the first time. So, you know, it's good they're doing this. Lots of accounts that are released and whatnot. So I'm not changing my name. So, but I do have a few hopes for something that might be released for another potential project, give or take. So we'll just have to wait and see if that kind of name pops up. So, as well as RuneScape membership, there's a minimum requirement of 250 total level to claim a release name. So I'm guessing they won't put them out for new accounts then?
Looks like it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's fair because... you know, you want them to go to people who have been searching for such a name. So
it also means that you have to use a name change and you have to use a or a bond, which means it's available to members only,
right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. And please note, we will not be publishing a list of names that will be released, which, I mean, I think is good. Because it's going to prevent sniping and whatnot, seeing if there's a good name on a list. And you're only going to go for that name if you actually want it. So I think this is a much better and more orderly way of doing it. You know, the only downside is it happens between 14:30 and 15:30 UTC. So if you're not available at that time, that might be a bit cumbersome to work around. JAGX recommends that you put a notification on your phone for whenever they tweet using the Twitter app so that you get a notification for all their tweets so you can see when this happens. That's their preferred strategy to let you know when this is going to be happening.
Yeah, I guess not releasing a name, like list of names, also sort of prevents there going to be a market for these names.
That's
like,
right.
If you look at a list of names and you see a name that's like Dave, I mean, there's probably people that want Dave, so you could snipe it and then sell it for a bond or something. I think that's something that Jerry's wants to prevent. And like, if you don't know what names will be released, it's going to be harder finding good names that people want. You sort of have to come up with them yourself and try all of them out. So
yeah,
I can see they're arguing there.
I wonder if the name Sirion's Pal has been released.
Is that not available then?
I don't know. I haven't checked, but I think that would be a real fun name for someone to join Clan Quest with.
I would generally be, I would probably be a bit abashed when that happens.
Oh, it just means you got an admirer out there.
Hmm.
Anyways, this week's Treasure Hunter promotion is the Gemerator, and, you know, normally I don't like to bring too much attention to these because they're just there, and you see them when you open Treasure Hunter Daily. You don't really need us to tell you about them, but I thought I would this week because this, of course, allows you to receive the Cape Crown and Necklace and Gem Sack that are one in the form of tradable tokens. So if you receive one of these, you can claim the token in for a cosmetic, or you can sell it. So there are some things here that you can purchase this time around. And if you are looking for the gem set armor from Treasure Hunter, now might be a time to do it, because you might see a price dip because they're on the market once again. So that is the purpose of highlighting the Gemerator update here. And, yeah, have fun getting the higher level gems on Treasure Hunter. What is this? Yeah, it's an Instagram video. Interesting. Interesting to use an Instagram video to do this posting. Okay, then. Well, that's it for RS updates, unless there's anything else you'd like to talk about before we move on to our discussion topics and questions.
I wish, but it was a bit of a quiet week.
Yes. All righty. Well, the first one is a discussion topic from Colton pertaining to Master Quest Cape requirements. So he says, in regards to the established mechanism of distributing game lore via monster drops, is this a fair mechanic to force PVMing in some capacity upon a community largely composed of skillers and others less interested in intense combat? Why did this mechanic start, and why do we still use it to discover lore? Would you have an alternate route of discovery in mind? You know, I think this is an internal question going back to the Master Questscape first being announced. Because of lore drops everywhere.
We have to look at, like, what came first, right? What was the intention of this? Was the intention that Jagex said, we want to distribute some lore, so we will add drops? Or they were like, we need some interesting drops that people go for. Let's put some lore in there to give some reason to go for them. I think I would find it more likely that it's the latter. It's like, you give some, you want to reward a player for killing, say, a boss. So you want to add some cool rewards, but you also don't want to have people always win this really expensive item, because that's going to influence the market. And so you want to do something that the player can feel good about, but is also really scoped to just that player. So what do? You drop a lore book. It's a lazy solution. It's a simple solution. And I think that's how it started. And then you get this all the way around, where, like, people that want all the lore have to go in there and get it, and then you get this thing, and now there's an expectation that new monsters come with new lore, so they add the lore drops, and I think it all rolled up from there.
Yeah, I think you're right on that regard. And, you know, I ultimately don't think that on the whole, this is a good way of doing things. But like you said, there needs to be something from the NPC that's going to drop that isn't going to influence the market, and, you know, just be a pure monetary drop, because that's not always what it's about, right? It's not always about making the most GP, yes?
I mean, let's say a new monster comes out and drops some sort of new armor. You could get the armor by just paying for it on the GE generally, like, almost all the armor drops, if not all of them, are just tradable. But if you want to get the lore book, you're sort of forced to go there yourself. You can't do it. You can't have other people do it for you, basically. And that's the difference. And that is sort of
right,
a way to lure people there. But I think the discussion topic, like Colton is spot on with this, is that the people that are attracted to that are probably generally the wrong group of people, and that's where you get this disparity.
Yeah, and, you know, I have no real interest in going through the entire boss run numerous times to get all the lore drops for a Master Quest Cape. I don't think that would be something that I would want to do. And, you know, I also think that it is forcing people, like Colton says, to do something that you don't want to, for something that, you know, when you look at it, what quest in RuneScape has had the most intense combat? I honestly think that that has to be the first Nomad that came out before he was toned down. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's anything harder that comes to mind for you.
Nomad's allergy was pretty difficult as well. Maybe the dwarf quest, Birthright of the Dwarves.
Okay. See, I didn't really count that one difficult because at the time I did it, it was kind of bugged. So I don't know if they made that better. But see, the point is that there's only been a few really tough quest boss encounters, which is fine. And ultimately, when you force people to go out into the PVM community and learn it just for the drops, it doesn't really feel as though that is a good thing that should be done. But, I mean, what is the alternate option for this, to give out these lore drops rather than, you know, forcing people to go PVM at the God Wars dungeon, for example, next, the newest next encounter?
I mean, it's not that lore drops, as from skilling, are completely unheard of. Like, for example, the Elder Chronicles, that's lore drops that come from skilling.
That's done in a pretty good way.
That is done in a pretty good way, but also it takes forever. And yeah, it's probably, I mean, I've never heard somebody was like, oh, yay, I get to do divination to get the Elder Chronicle. Well, maybe I have heard somebody say it in exactly that tone with the sheer sarcasm Drake Benoff, but I don't think people particularly enjoy just grinding a skill to get lore drops. While, I mean, in a way, grinding combat is not very different, but at least there's people that actually have a lot of joy in that, maybe. I don't know.
So there's not really another option that could be done for the various lore drops from combat, because, I mean, there is no way to go skilling in a boss encounter, and there is no real skilling mechanics that could be used in the new next encounter, for example. That's just the one I'm choosing because it's the most recent for getting lore drops. So,
I mean,
it can't really be changed at this point, can it?
It is really hard. Like you can't really let's say you're crafting, like you're bang standing, you're crafting, all of a sudden, poof, a book. That doesn't work either, right?
No.
So it also depends. Like, how do you incorporate it in a skill that is meaningful and not incredibly silly? Like, I don't even get how we get rocks from cooking. Like, don't explain that to me.
Our most loreful skill is divination.
Yes, it is, and that's because it came out of lore, and it's probably the only skill that was really incorporated with it. But summoning, for example, could incorporate some lore in that by, I don't know, talking to spirits or
talking to animals.
But I think the best way to incorporate lore in a game would be through exploration and
a new exploration system.
I don't know if it has to be a new exploration system, but like there is a way to get more lore just by going around looking at things. And I don't know if the hidden gao actually gives some lore, but that's, for example, you have to like do things to get to it. The only problem is that it's a lot more expensive in terms of development time to implement something like that than to make a monster drop another book, because the only thing they have to do is write the lore, translate it in a couple of languages, put it in a book for which the code is already written, and add it to the drop table. So it's a term of investment, and I think monster drops is just a very easy way to add new lore, and that's
why, like, we use
all
it.
There's all these factors.
And why it's here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And here's our alternate route of discovery. It's kind of like an exploration system, you said. Basically, look at things in-game. An example of this, I guess, might be the elf crystals that you could search when you first get to Prifdinas, perhaps?
Yeah, something like that. Like, systems like that are a lot more fun. They're more rewarding. As if you do them yourself, like, that's the downside.
That's the caveat there.
Of exploration. Like,
yeah. If you use a guide, you kind of defeat the purpose.
And if you do that with, like, PVM, like, you have to put the investment in there anyway. And, like, it still makes a difference if you're good or bad and do faster kills or not. But in the end, that's still... You have to put that time investment in. While if you do it for exploration, that doesn't really work. Then for skilling, the problem is that it's hard to incorporate. So it's just... It's the easiest way, which in a way makes it the lazy solution that Jagex chose for. And yeah. Maybe that's a sad thing. Maybe it's worth taking a look at it and spending some time on finding good solutions. But
yeah, and I mean, when you think about it, the Master Quest Cape requirement is supposed to be about lore, supposed to be about quests. And, you know, based purely on that definition, I don't think it makes sense that it should be, you know, much harder than the boss encounters that we had during the quests. And it is. And you need to adapt yourself to it. And, you know, thinking about it this way, this is perhaps why we have such a large PVM contingent in Clan Quest, perhaps, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, I think I would love for this to be undone in a way and have an alternate solution, but I don't think that can be done now that the cape is in-game and all the lore drops are in the various boss mechanics, unless they had exploration systems that were alternate to these, like explore the God Wars dungeon, for example, for various lore pieces and maybe do little things along there that were related to skilling. That might have been interesting.
Yeah, I mean, like, maybe there's, like wall drawings or something that you can check and see and maybe even translate. Like,
yeah,
something
or maybe,
like the
maybe even some wall drawings or, you know, some stuff that you need to use your skilling with to unlock them.
Like the murals we got with the Adamant and Rune Dragons, for
yeah,
example.
Yeah, that was good. And
so, I mean, there are solutions to this. The problem is, it's hard to make these as rewarding and as interesting in a way without making it really easy to get them, and you want some sort of ramp to get there.
Yeah. And, I mean, I can just imagine a case where you would have had to use a combination of firemaking or runecrafting to reveal some secret door or painting in the God Wars dungeon that was covered with ice, and you get some lore behind it, and maybe need to kill a few Slayer monsters along the way, and maybe a mini Slayer boss kind of thing, and that might have been a fun little thing to have in the God Wars dungeon. So,
but yeah, that's... Well, I don't want to say infinitely more, but that's a lot more investment you have to put into getting that lore information in a game than just adding a book to a monster. And I think at this point, like, given the very limited scope that Jagex has on their updates to add this kind of stuff, I think the question we are currently having to ask ourselves is, it's either this or nothing at all. And then it's the question, do you want new stuff or do you not want new stuff? And yeah, it depends on the person, I guess, what the answer is. But Jagex also wants to keep pushing these requirements to keep people playing the game. So I think we'll continue to see monster drops, monster lore drops.
Alrighty. Thank you, Colton. Next up from Trekkie, with 120 Slayer around the horizon, what are your plans and hopes with getting Slayer up? It's going to be a long and hard road. His plan is that he plans to go and augment his weapons and armor and get as much invention XP along the way, and maybe put a few perks in there for once. So, you know, I wouldn't mind having a look at 120 Slayer again, assuming it was traditional Slayer, and, you know, if it carried on the same sentiment that we had going from 1 to 99. Because I don't think that was very clear in the dev diaries that we've seen so far. It basically sounds like they're reinventing a second skill going forward. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it might be like a mini bossing encounter. It might not be. It might be something completely different. So with that being said, I don't think I can say too much on this, but my hope would be that, you know, it would just continue the same general trend of Slayer that we've seen over the last decade since it's been out. And ultimately, with that, you know, maybe have a few extra boss-like creatures and harder Slayer creatures along the way, like we have with the Adamant and Rune Dragons, and how you can get the elite tasks of those. So I think that would be good for 120 Slayer. So I know there are people out there who are rushing it right now to get 120 before it comes out just so they can access everything, but I don't know if that's in the spirit of the update and if you don't get the same experience with that. It's much the same reason I haven't got 99 mining or smithing, because I want to wait until the mining and smithing rework comes out for that.
So yeah, I don't want to focus on getting more Slayer experience before the Manifest expansion comes out. I've never cared particularly for the skill. The only reason I sort of kept training it is because it makes sense as part of my invention training. And even though I haven't particularly focused on leveling it up, like even through combat and invention training, I have gotten it to 102 Slayer already, which is not even halfway to just to 120. It's not even a quarter of the way to 120, and I don't want to think about that. But also, I feel that I should give it a chance as soon as it comes out and see what it has to offer. And I don't know, depending on that, I'll probably decide whether I actually want to go for 120. But I feel we should definitely try to experience it as intended, instead of just trying to get the requirement out of the way it is, because maybe it will be a really enjoyable experience, and otherwise, the old Slayer will still be there after the update.
That's true, and you will be able to level with the old Slayer, I'd imagine, to 120. So, Alrighty. Next one from Tycho. After the Avatar rework, what should the J-Mods look at and hopefully improve for RS clans? For me, it's the permissions model.
Oh, please, yes. That it's so terrible. It's inflexible, and like we have a general high level of trust with our members in our clan, but we can't give all our users all the tools we want them to have, because some things are artificially limited to be admin rank or higher, and you can't make your entire clan admins, because if you're an admin, you also automatically get like the right to, I think, kick guests or something. And like there's so many assumptions in the system, and there's just no good reason for it for them. And like, something we like, people are always confused about the ranks, the names of the ranks, for example. Like, why is it not possible to you do custom rank names? Why is it not possible to completely change the permissions as you want them? Why do you have to be an admin or higher to get a certain role given to you? Why do you have to give a certain role to a person to make them an avatar warden? Because that's the only role that actually does something. I can't stress how terrible it is.
Yeah. And I mean, if I was to choose something else, because it sounds like you agree with me on this one, that the permissions model should be increased. You know, I think it'd be nice if there was a central admin log for kicks, bans, promotions. And, you know, this might be taxing for Jagex, but, you know, a chat log that we can access and use that doesn't require us to post screenshots of chat when something happens, so we can copy and paste and look at it somewhere, you know? That kind of thing.
I mean, we are sort of moving away from the clan chat as primary communication channel. Like, Discord has been adopted a lot within Clan Quest. We have a special offsite with forums that is used a lot. And they are all a lot easier to manage. They are a lot nicer, but that doesn't take away that in-game chat is something that will always be an important part of how you play the game. And right now it's just so under par and so annoying to deal with, and it feels that it's unnecessary, and I find it shocking, to be honest, how all these clan updates are just postponed again and again. Yeah. And again. It's clans are such an important part of the game.
And
I think that,
you know, I think that they don't, I think that they do it that way because there are, it's not something that people get excited about unless you are specifically involved in making these clan decisions.
Correct. And that's the point. That's like most clan updates cater to clan leadership, and clan leadership will by definition be a small target group. But clan leadership runs clans, and clans run the game. I mean, that's hope is oversimplifying it, but if the clan system is not updated at all, people are gonna pull out of the game more and more, gonna use the in-game system less and less, and with the dependency on the in-game thing like removing, like people don't have to log in anymore to socialize, and I think that will slowly lead to the deterioration of people that will find their social needs satisfied somewhere else. And
yeah,
I just, this system is so important, and I understand that maybe this code is all spaghetti code. Maybe it's a lot of legacy code that has to be
maybe
dealt
it'll be
with.
One of the expansions this year, or perhaps it's hoping for too much.
That's no, I don't think it will be. And if anything, the expansions might make it even less likely to be updated, because it's probably a pretty big task. And where would you put it between all the updates that were already promised? It's just, I think you're right, it's not exciting.
No. I don't know. I mean, I think we hit on two of the biggest things, and we highlighted why Jagex doesn't do it just in choosing what we chose, the permissions model and, you know, some of the back-end stuff with that. So, and I mean, if you ask any other player in RS, are they concerned about this? They're going to say no, because chances are they've never played around with this and they don't know how cumbersome it can be. So,
yeah, and especially with these content surveys making such a, being such a big part of the decision making process, like clan updates are always going to be low scoring there. Like I put it on top, and you put it on top, maybe, and maybe
I think it was definitely the top five for me.
And maybe if we ask our clan to like consider it, it will get some traction, but it won't win against the sheer awesomeness of Manifos, say.
Yeah, or PVM,
so,
or Slayer.
I don't know, but like, I would like the entire system to be reworked. Like it, in a way, it's such a mess already with like French chats and clans and all that stuff, like separated, and like, what is the clan really good for? Like, what is the clan system in RuneScape really good for, except for chatting in a common chat box?
Citadel skilling, and I mean,
Citadel skilling.
That's
an
option.
The notice board is there, but then the notice board.
But even that has its problems.
That has its like. What I want to do with the notice board, for example, is first of all, I want everybody to be able to just access it everywhere. I don't know if that's possible. I want to be able to edit it from anywhere. And I want it to automatically send notifications instead of having to manually do it.
Yeah.
Maybe even have like, I mean, all the events like the Valentine's event have teleport options these days. Why can't I give my clan event a teleport option, or at least teleport to the closest lodestone
right.
location?
Right.
I
mean, if you're having an event at Trouble Brewing, it's not very hard to know where Trouble Brewing is. You just get Jagex to pop the coordinates in for Trouble Brewing, and there you go.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. I think Jagex needs to step away from this whole model like, oh, we have to do all these JMOD events. You need to empower the community, and you can't empower the community without just Well, you're just
I think the
completely ignoring the clan system, which is the basis, the foundation to empower.
You're right. And you know the problem, I think, with community events and why they had to switch to JMOD events is because, one, you don't get the star power of JMOD events. Two, community events, clans and whatnot can't give stuff away for free, spawn stuff for free, spawn portable skilling stations, spawn bosses, you name it. And three, you know, previously people really didn't come to community events. Some of the best community events we do are ones that are either done spontaneously or are planned to have a specific reward around them and doing something fun. So, and, you know, telegraphing that to the wider RS community is hard.
I mean, we have Clan Citadel Battlefields. Like, why
I used that once and that was it.
Why can't you give limited? I mean, I don't want to give you people power to like do all the JMOD, fancy JMOD stuff, but it's really hard to utilize the battlefield in like a sort of spontaneous way. Like, you have to plan the entire battlefield ahead, and then maybe you can do something fun with it. But in a way, I want some sort of a sandbox where you can also play around a bit. And we have some tools. We have the game tools, and we have. I mean, we have the battlefield. And
don't forget the theater. Like,
and the theater. I mean, people can do so much with the theater as well. And I just feel like on all the levels, like the from organization to actual execution, like, why won't you empower the community to do awesome stuff, which would remove the need to do all the JMOD events as intense as they do it now? And like, we have a weekly Vindict mass in our clan. Like, why is that any different from the weekly PVM mass that is organized by the JMOD?
You know what you do is you go through the clan list and you look at the clans with the most members who are the most active, and you choose ones who are based on skilling, combat, questing, bossing, you name it. And then for each week of the month, you have, you know, two, maybe three different clans, one per day, host an event of some sort. And with that, you know, you can effectively allow the JMODs to take kind of a break from doing these things.
I mean, one of pretty much the biggest events that Clan Quest has organized are the Quest Fests, which were basically big parties in the Clan Quest Citadel, and we hold the record of most quest cape emotes done at the same time. It's like, that was part of the Quest Fest, and that took so much to organize. And that's the kind of stuff you want the community to empower to, but what you get is JMOD's doing it. And also this, I mean, forgive me my wording, but like this little circle jerk of people, like these famous YouTubers and live streamers that are just pretty much, they're so close with Jagex that they could pretty much be considered part of the same group. And there's this community below that.
Well, they tried that once. They actually incorporated a bunch of YouTubers and streamers to JX once. And, you know, the only one who hasn't moved on or gotten fired from that is Mod Lee.
I mean, yes, but on the other hand, like, I mean, they changed that a bit. But that's also, there's, I would say there's some people in the, like, big people in the RuneScape community that are sort of sponsored by Jagex, as in they always get the attention. It's like, when you follow the Twitter, it's always the same people that get mentioned and retweeted. And I mean, this is
the RS Twitter is also famous for retweeting the memes from Reddit.
Oh yeah. Oh, look, don't get me started on that.
I mean,
not once, not twice. No, like numerous times, and we can't see it anymore. I think there needs to be so much more done.
So basically what you're saying is that community management could be done if it was, could be done better if a lot was embraced by the clans in the game rather than going towards insular individuals and groups.
Correct. Correct. I mean, years ago you had featured clans. Our clan has been featured like twice. Like, that were the times where Plans.
Oh yeah, those were news postings, and they were actually posted on the front page. And I think that was actually before the in-game clan system, wasn't it?
Yes, correct. And then they started to empower the clans, and then all of a sudden it stopped.
Ay. Well, I think we've written a whole book on this matter in this episode. Lots of things that could be done. And
I get carried away a bit when it's about this, because as you can probably notice, there's so much sort of underlying frustration in trying to make and build a community and then running into all these walls that are sort of artificially put in place. And like if they were at least broken down a tiny bit, that would, I think, not only make huge improvements to each of the individual communities within RuneScape, but also allow them to be out in the open more. Like,
yeah,
basically that.
I completely agree with you, and I think you know, there's lots of people that could talk on this, and you know, it definitely is something that has been glossed over. And you know, I think it just comes down to a lack of resources and JAX focusing on things that, as we open this up with, things that deliver more bang for the buck. So, alrighty, thank you everyone for your questions. If you want to send those in, you can email us questions@rsbnb.com. We also take text messages and voicemails at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And there is a weekly forum topic posted on the RSBNB forums at update.rsbnb.com/ask.
All right. I think especially given these, like, bear patch weeks coming up more and more, like, it's good that if you have like an interesting topic to talk about, like, just send it in. And
oh yeah, and I
and
mean,
maybe it can't be incorporated in the right in the next episode, yeah. But I don't know.
And that's what we want to do. You know, we started this last year, the discussion topics, when we started to see, okay, we're shifting away from huge updates every week. Let's also bring in some discussion topics as well. And Colton did that this week. And, you know, for lesser effect, Tycho did that as well. So, you know, your questions and discussion topics can really shift where we go on this episode. And I think that's a perfect thing to do for patch weeks is, you know, rather than looking on the bowels of the internet or the RuneScape official forums for what people are talking about, let's go to you guys and see what needs to be talked about relating to RuneScape and what needs to be worked on and what we can kind of come up with together for ideas and discuss that, and maybe, just maybe, some of that will get back to Jagex. So I think that's a good merit for discussion topics right there. So thank you everyone for submitting this week. Really good.
Awesome.
Okay, so tech news. Patch Tuesday, if you run a Microsoft operating system. On March 14th was Patch Tuesday, and it was a huge, huge Patch Tuesday, mainly because the Patch Tuesday in February was skipped. But first, this Patch Tuesday patches 18 vulnerabilities in the Windows platform, 8 of which were classed as critical, allowing remote code execution. The rest were classed as important. So that basically means that if you are running Windows and you ultimately end up getting caught by one of these vulnerabilities out there somehow, you could have remote code running on your computer by a malicious actor. So definitely run Windows Update this week. And the reason this is so large is because they skipped the Patch Tuesday in February, which hasn't happened since 2003. They've been going on, you know, first Tuesday of every month since 2003. Haven't missed it and have been on schedule, but they missed this one. And rather than doing it later in the month of February, they just decided to do it in March. And, you know, they didn't say exactly why they did this, but it is largely inferred that it was due to a showstopper bug in one of the patches or perhaps a patch distribution and build system. That is the system that packages all the updates and delivers them to the people. And they felt that, you know, rather than throwing the schedule off and forcing people to deploy patches when it wasn't time, wasn't the right thing to do. So they just delayed everything until March. And that's where we get 18 vulnerabilities patched in this Patch Tuesday. And, you know, there's a lot of them here. So it's definitely something that you want to run. I mean, Adobe Flash Player for Microsoft is in here. Microsoft Office. Pretty much anything you can think of. There was also this one related to the Microsoft SMB server, which allows you to share files between various Microsoft computers. There was a bug in that. And there was actually code running around wild on the internet for this entire month that could have exploited this. So it is definitely something that you want to update to if you have not done so already. And I think if you use Windows 10, that's mostly handled for you unless you evade it purposely. So, yeah, definitely run your Windows updates this month. And it'll take a while to restart this time compared to previous months, but it's definitely worth it. So if your computer's hounding you to restart this week, that's why. So. I don't think I have anything else to say on this one. How about you? No?
I think it's pretty straightforward. Just run it, even though it's annoying.
Yeah. And normally we don't talk about these, but it was pretty big this month. So, alrighty, next tech news story is Pandora's Spotify rival launched this week. They're calling it Pandora Premium. Now, I don't think you have Pandora in the UK, right?
I have never heard of it.
Okay. Well, Pandora was perhaps the initial and very first online streaming music service. Basically, what Pandora gained fame from is that it would generate customized radio stations for you based on songs or artists that you would enter. So, for example, you would enter your favorite song or artist, and then it would play songs from that. And if you thumbs up that song, it would give you more music that was related to it. Now, it's not just related based on genre or, you know, time it was released. It's based on the identifying factors that existed in that music. So what Pandora did differently is it cataloged music based on the characteristics like beat, tempo, whether it was, you know, an upbeat song, slow song, how what kind of instruments were used, and basically it used what was called the Music Genome Project, and it categorized music as in a, I guess, I don't want to say scientific factor, but it basically categorized music based on scientific identifiers. So that's what Pandora initially did, and it basically was the first music discovery platform. And last year we heard that they were launching their Spotify competitor, which is launching now, Pandora Premium, $10 a month, which is roughly the same price as Spotify. It's going to offer pretty much exactly the same thing that Pandora has become known for. And the addition of what you have in Spotify or Apple Music, like selections of tracks that you know that you'll want to hear. So if you want to, you know, build your own playlist for, I don't know what, Sirion, what's your favorite music group or album or something?
Ooh, I don't know. I usually listen to, like, film music.
Okay. So let's just say you chose one of those then, say a soundtrack from your most favorite movie. It would basically go through its database and find things that were similar to that based on the aspects of that musical track. And
so how would that be different from, like, Spotify Radio?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly what Spotify is doing under the hood, but basically Pandora looks at every little aspect of the music track. You know, what instrument is it played with? What key is it played in? How fast is it? Is it a happy song? Is it a sad song? Is it an angry song? So it would go based on those kind of identifying factors and find things that were similar to it.
I mean, I have started using Google Play Music myself, mostly because I wanted to, like, mostly because I wanted to sort of move away from Spotify, and Google Play Music was just, I don't know. I have a Google account. I don't have Apple devices. I don't. Not everything is an Apple device, so I wanted something cross-platform. So that's why I ended up with Google Play Music, and that also has like a radio function. And
yeah,
and if I have to guess, it probably uses machine learning on it,
right? And you know,
so I'm not entirely sure what Pandora has to offer over something like, I find Google Play Music a really strong product myself. I find it stronger than Spotify. So what would Pandora have to offer?
And see, that's, you're highlighting the reason and what Pandora Music and Pandora Premium is going to have to struggle with in this sector that is so developed. Because, you know, for the vast majority of people, the Discover feature on Spotify will work. The For mm-hmm. You feature on Apple Music will work. And your suggestions on Google Play Music will also work. So mm-hmm. that's what Pandora needs to really identify itself with and sell, the fact that it's better at this if you want a discovery platform. So,
especially considering that, like, I think people who are interested in a streaming server or service have settled on one by now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's the same. Like, let's say you want to add like another video streaming service. Like, people have chosen by now what streaming service they go with. And I think it's really difficult to put yourself on that market without offering something that is substantially different and better than the others. And I mean, while I understand the whole point of like music genomes, like if you look at machine learning, for example, that, I mean, you don't know what machine learning does. That's the fun part about it. But I assume that is something it figured out by now and probably does. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting for people that might maybe have been using the free Pandora service for now. But
yeah,
I don't know. It's going to struggle.
I mean, their thing that they really highlighted with Pandora Premium is that they will allow users to enter one or two songs onto a playlist, and then Pandora will automatically fill in the rest of that playlist with however many songs you want. So, yeah. But everything else can do that. So it's going to be a matter of trying to convince people that their service is better. So
yeah.
I don't know. And I mean, there's just so much of the market taken up with Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Play Music that it's going to be really hard for them to enter at this point. And, you know, I think even last year, 2015, was perhaps a little too late for this.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see where it goes, but, you know, it's priced the same as all the other ones. And for someone who doesn't have one already, and for someone who has been using Pandora, this might be an option. All right, you ready for the next social app that's going to be taking over the youngins on the internet?
I had a look at the article, and for all the listeners at home, I want to picture this image of me continuously facepalming to the next section.
Okay. Google has announced an experimental app called I can't even remember what it's called. That's how much of an impact it's having. Uptime. And it is flashy and neon based on the way they've designed it, so it's clear who they're marketing towards. But the idea behind this is that you can see what your friends are watching on YouTube in real time. And you can join them, and you can react and comment on it, and, you know, share it together with your friends in real time. It's only available on iOS right now. This, of course, comes from Google. You know, it's got features that look like they're from Facebook Live. It's got features that look like they're partly from Periscope. And, you know, it's all meshed together with YouTube and social. So, yeah, it's live commenting and emojis and whatnot whenever you're looking at video. So, I mean, obviously this is not appealing to you, and it's not appealing to me as it is right now.
I see it in action. Let's explain quickly like what it is. Basically, you go to the video and you can see the progress of your friends in the video, and you can add sort of like smileys and stickers and particle effects on top of the video, and your friends will see that, so you can like sort of like poke at people's noses or something and laugh at you doing that, and yeah, that kind of stuff. So that's to give a context of what it's going to do. It's like, yeah,
like if like an example would be is that you see someone is watching the latest RuneScape bossing video and you have uptime and you click on that and you can join them in watching it in progress and you can comment as it's going on. But I think the question is, who is this geared towards and what makes you facepalm so hard about it?
It's a gimmick. It's why I can't even explain it, but why would you want to spend your time doing this? Like, there is very few times where I want to share watching a video with a friend. And when I do, it's often like a playthrough of a game, like a particular nice game or something.
Sure.
And I'd rather have either face-to-face or at least over voice normal contact with that
right.
person, as opposed to putting stars and smiley faces and stickers
and
happy stuff on top of it, because that's just going to distract me.
Yeah.
And this is the same thing as...
perhaps this is where Google wants Snapchat to go next.
I mean, it's just the same thing with, say, the what Apple did with their Messages app in the latest iOS version, where they added stickers, big text, colorful text, weird effects. And I'm like, I don't see the whole point of this. Maybe this is something that just doesn't strike me because this is not aimed at my generation. Maybe I'm too old already, mind you. But like, I don't see the whole point of that. Like, for chat apps, I want something that I can exchange text with another person. That's all I want from a chat app. And this is like, if I want to share a video with a friend, I have other ways to communicate over that. And while I get that the live stuff is sort of new, I have never had a need for that. And I definitely don't have a need for neon colored fancy stuff in my face on top of my video that I'm trying to watch.
Yeah. And I mean, it looks like it's a side project from some branch of Google, which, I mean, some things definitely come good out of that because that's where Gmail came from. But, you know, unless this gained further integration with YouTube and didn't appear as childish, I want to say, then I don't see much going forward for this for me personally. Unless, of course, you know, it takes off with a younger segment of the market, like the people who are currently in school and whatnot, which seems to be where these mobile devices are designed to be.
I mean, in the pre-show, you mentioned that this might be integrated into YouTube, and I hope it isn't.
Well, not like this. I mean,
but like you have to consider a toned down
version integrated into YouTube, where you can join someone in progress of watching a YouTube video, comment, and maybe have a voice chat with them at the same time.
I don't know. That feels like more like a live stream, not really like a video, but like drop-in video. I don't know. I feel that if you want to do that, you can coordinate it. When I watch a YouTube video, I don't want to be joined by a friend watching that YouTube video. I just want to watch it like on my own. That's what I do. And this whole social aspect, like if I want to be social, I go to other things, not YouTube. And maybe that sounds weird to some people. Maybe there's people here in the audience that like love going in the commenting section and doing all that stuff. I just go there for videos, and this sort of distracts me. And I don't know. The only thing that might be worth considering is that you have the YouTube Kids product, and that is something that might synergize
maybe
with this. But I don't know. I feel this is incredibly gimmicky, and I am not entirely sure why this is getting... I mean, I don't know if it's funded. I think it is. But why this is funded by Google, and I don't know.
It's version 1.1 free.
So yeah, I mean, I'm really interested to see if somebody in the audience is interested in this stuff, but I
yeah, it might be outside of our base here, but we'll see.
I find it a bit gimmicky, and I mean, this is maybe something.
Oh, you can invite people. They added it so in 1.1, you can invite your friends to watch a video with you. That'll make all the difference.
I don't know. Maybe I just don't get the whole social video watching in general. Maybe that's something that has to grow. But
yeah, I'm with you on that.
You said it, like Snapchat is also something we just don't get, right?
Yep.
So maybe we are just not getting it in this way, and maybe this is
the best thing to come since Snapchat, and won't be the thing that destroys Snapchat.
I mean, I would not mourn that, but I would also be like not entirely sure what to do with it.
That's right. Well, I mean, the next logical step for them is to add, of course, live streaming to this, and Google would have its own Periscope competitor.
That's YouTube live streams.
Yeah,
and
but, I mean...
I can see this for live streams maybe a bit more interesting, but for videos?
Yeah. Mm. Oh, this is interesting. It's got a 17-plus rating. You must be at least 17 years old to download this app.
What?
Because it can pull videos from YouTube. Though, of course, Apple doesn't check that. That's just the rating they gave it. So any young person who has parental restrictions on their iOS device will not be able to download this app.
Well, then. Okay. I definitely cannot think of anybody of the age of 17 that would be interested in this.
Well, I mean, how many people under the age of 17 nowadays have restrictions on their iOS app or on their iPhones?
Oh, that's true.
So.
But
let's just move on to skill of the month. All right. So the March skill of the month update is thieving. GemAndy52 currently has 33.3 million XP gained. There is a race for second going on right now. Undoer has 9.3 million XP gained. Parnassius 8.6 and Flash 7.6. So very close there, and then a bunch closer near the bottom. So yeah, who knows? There's half a month left, so things could definitely change with this. But there's your skill of the month update for this week, everyone. Keep stealing those or keep picking those elves' pockets, and we'll report back your progress next week.
But if you want to win, you should go to the Dwarf Traders.
That's right. Use the new crystallized spell on them. Or I'm sorry, crystal mask. I wonder, did that one get a progress bar as well for how long it lasts?
No, only crystallized. A different spells.
Yeah, they should add that for Crystal Mask too then. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we do have some achievements of the week. I will go through these right now. This is actually the first time in a long time we've had a manageable number here where we haven't had to take a breather in between. So thank you for that, everyone. Not to discourage people, but EULogs got 120 invention on March 13th. On March 12th, we have Barrage Tank with 99 woodcutting and Daniel J. Saint with 120 invention. And then Patapolo got 99 fletching on the 11th. Feel My Pokes, 99 crafting on March 10th. And then Occult also got 99 Slayer and Agility on March 10th as well. Congratulations, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Nice achievements right there. Okay. So it's time for Pick of the Week. I have a Pick of the Week that I think if you play games, FPS games in particular, on your computer, you should probably look at picking up next time you need a new mouse. So I recently came into the acquisition of a Logitech G502 Proteus Spectrum gaming mouse. Now, this gaming mouse is one that has Logitech's traditional shape. Behind it, it's not oddly shaped. It's not a magic mouse or one of those ergonomic mice that try and contort your hand and weird formations like that. So, you know, in general, I find this is a natural feel for what we have come to expect from mice. Now, this is a mouse that is probably best used for FPS gaming because it doesn't have one of those huge MMO mouse gaming grids. So if you want a huge selection of buttons like that, this might not be the mouse for you. But if you're looking for a mouse that you can use for gaming with a few programmable buttons on the side that's wired, this is probably the mouse you want to look at. And the reason for that is not only does it fit well in your hand, it is also customizable with regards to its weight. So if you prefer a heavier mouse, you can add some extra weight to it, which I haven't done, but I know other people who have. It's also got customizable profiles, as you would come to expect for any gaming mouse, so it can automatically detect whether you're playing RuneScape or Overwatch and adjust the keys on the side of the mouse accordingly, because, I mean, I use keys, custom keys on my mouse to control the action bar when I'm RuneCrafting. I don't know, have you ever tried that? Binding a key on the side of your mouse to do something in RS?
Nope.
Yeah. And, you know, you can do that now with the action bar, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
It also allows you to completely shift the color and control all the DPI and whatnot as you would normally do with any other mouse. But of course, the main reason that I ended up picking a second one of these up recently is because the old mouse that I had on the Mac really just, you know, it was flying all over the place and the acceleration was messed up and everything. And I don't know, it just wasn't a great experience anymore. And, you know, if you just want a normal mouse, this is probably one that you want to pick up. And I have to say, of all the mice I've used on a Mac, this one feels the most natural, like Windows, due to the software it comes with. So if you use both Mac and Windows and you want a consistent experience across both platforms, the software that ships with this mouse does that. So all in all, a good mouse if you're wanting something and you do a bit of gaming along the way. That's the Logitech G502 Proteus Spectrum. So
that's cool. I'm currently experimenting with like something different because of my RSI. But
right.
I definitely, if I ever need to consider a new mouse, I'll keep it in mind. It looks
looks
pretty awesome, and I like pretty colors. So.
Yeah, you know, the biggest problem for me is I had the M705 Marathon mouse, which is a wireless mouse. It feels great.
I have it for my laptop.
And it just works the best. But there was a firmware update to the mouse that, you know, really just threw out of whack the acceleration and the scrolling and whatnot. And, I mean, you got weird, unexpected stuff happening with the scrolling. You had to scroll extra before it would actually start moving. And, I don't know, the firmware update borked the mouse, and there was no way to revert the firmware that I could tell on that. And this one has the added benefit of being wired, so you don't need to worry about changing your batteries ever. So I'm still a fan of wired mice, and you know, it just fits so nicely in my hand. So that's why it's this mouse. And you know, in so many ways, mice are like shoes. You gotta have one that fits, and once you find one, you don't want to change. So very happy with this mouse.
Sounds cool.
Oh, another great feature of it is it also has the Logitech frictionless scroll as a toggle. So if you are going through a long document or whatever, you can enable that and just get down to the very bottom of it.
I think I used it seriously once or twice. It's just too much fun to play around with.
Yeah, that's right. So. All righty. Well, what have you been up to this week?
Still being caught up in Zelda a lot, to be honest, but like I'm still really close to maxing. I just disassembled my second last item today, so now there's just one disassembly or seven left to max. I get my max cape. I have the party planned for Saturday.
Ooh, nice.
So yeah, I'm really excited. I sort of got to think about what to do after that.
Yeah, that's a big question, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I want to get Taskmaster, but that the only task left is Dominion Tower, which I hate. And I got all the achievements. That's fine. I just need the journal pages, but they're slow. They're annoying.
Hey, I got an idea. Jagex suggested lower drop rates last week for monsters. How about we do that for Dominion Tower soon?
Oh, let us do that. Like, I don't get it. Why do we... Desert tasks are the worst tasks. It's... yeah.
That's
yeah,
the thing that's preventing me from doing the desert task set, believe it or not.
That's I need to get the journal pages, and then after you get the journal pages, you need to unlock a few things and then do those, and then you can finally get the elite task. So I don't know. I'm probably gonna try and get more pages over time. I'm at 14 now, I think, out of 20. Yeah. So.
Oh, how long have you been working on it?
Long hours, many, many hours.
You're not helping my desire.
I'm sorry. It's terrible and not fun. I would like to get the Master Quest K, but we talked about it. It involves so many PVM and lore drops that I'm not sure if I'm up for that. I'm probably going to train some dungeoneering. I'm currently 110. I want to get it to 120.
Yeah. And you need 117 for the Master Quest
cape. And you need 117 for the Master Quest cape anyway. 115 for the Mar would also be nice, so I can slowly start working towards comp requirements. But given how long I took to get max, I don't expect to become anywhere close to completionist or the Master Quest cape in like the next year and a few.
Hey, well, at least you got a huge list of stuff to work on.
I mean, I will continue playing the game the way I used to, and that is when I log in, just decide what do I feel like doing and just do what I enjoy and not worry too much about where I end up. You have to enjoy the process. And sure, every now and then I spend some time on grinding, but that's only when I have the will to do that. But oftentimes I just log in and like I do it daily because that's like a tiny chunk of stuff, and then I just go and do whatever I want to do. I don't care about optimal training methods that much. I think it's a really relaxed way of playing, and it's sort of disrupted by these updates to Treasure Hunter all the time. It sort of like force you into like gathering stuff and those kind of things. But in general, I just live a really relaxed life in the game. So I'm probably just going to continue doing it. And maybe in like a few years, all of a sudden I'll have completionist cape, but
it'll be a moving target.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as for me this week, I have been progressing on the Herblore project. And you know, it's actually working out quite well, farming my own runners and then using those to make the prayer potions and then combining those into super prayer renewals and selling those. So I am enjoying myself with that. And I am still working through a huge pile of Snape grass that I have just been collecting over the years. So that's helping with that. You know, the hardest part is finding or farming enough of the Renner potions in a day, or Renner herbs, rather, in a day to do this. Perhaps I should be incorporating the Daily Kingdom into things and maybe fighting aberrant specters. I don't know. But that's what I'd do if I was really wanting to take it up a level. You know, but aside from that, I think I did a clue scroll this week. Nothing too amazing came out of that. And, you know, just started working on getting that attuned crystal teleport seed because apparently I don't like it when I have items sitting in the bank that I have to move around when they don't have placeholders. And we don't have, what's the word I'm looking for? Presets that can handle that. So that's what I've been up to. But I believe that does us for this patch week. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this alternate perspective on patch week, and that we incorporated the listener discussions from Tycho and Colton into the episode and kind of shifted the discussion based on that. I think that provided a lot of good discussion on the podcast, and hopefully some of that will trickle down to the RS community, and you guys will tell Jagex that you want a clan update and that they should look at other ways of doing lore drops in-game. So, all right. Anything else before we go?
No, not really.
Okay, then. Well, we will see you all next week, and thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye.